Today's Talk 10 Tuesday is sponsored by Ipsapalooza. Get ready to conquer the 2024 ICD-10 code changes with expert guidance. Click on the link in the comments section to learn more. We've been waiting for you. Come on in. It's Talk 10 Tuesday for September 19th, 2023 with Chuck Bach and substituting for Dr. Erica Reamer, Lydia Termarkarova. Today we welcome Angela Jordan, reporting on what's happening at the intersection of artificial intelligence and E&M coding. Lori Johnson has the latest coding news. Covering the social determinants of health is Tiffany Ferguson. Tim Powell is at the Tuesday News Desk, and Lydia Termarkarova will share her point of view. Now here's the publisher of ICD-10 Monitor, the host of Talk 10 Tuesday, and the guy who walked in this morning with a pumpkin spice latte and a cheeseburger, Chuck Bach.
Thanks, Gloria. Hello, everybody. Welcome to the 569th live edition of Talk 10 Tuesday. By the way, that reminds me, Clark, you know, a frog goes into McDonald's and he orders a cheeseburger. And the cashier looks at the frog and asks him, "Hey, would you like some fries for that, sir?" All right, never mind. Good morning, Lydia. As you heard Clark Anthony announce, Angela Jordan is with us. Today, Angela's going to be a new voice and a new face here on Talk 10 Tuesday. She's going to be reporting on how artificial intelligence is coming to the aid of coders when it comes to evaluation and management codes. What do you think about that?
Good morning, everyone. Lydia's here from Pacific Beach.
Very good. So, Lydia, I got to ask you, what's your point of view segment today?
Ooh, it's going to be a good one. I will be discussing the importance of revenue cycle operational assessment to find opportunities in improvement in a time of healthcare organization financial turmoil.
Yep, indeed. A lot of turmoil is going on, that's for sure. Excellent topic, Lydia. We look forward to hearing your talk back segment. Folks, we have a lot of news and reports. We're going to be with Tim Powell. Tim is at the Talk 10 Tuesday News Desk.
Thanks, Chuck. And today I'm going to be talking about making Medicare more accessible, a look at CMS's final rule on the Medicare Savings Program. The Medicare Savings Program, or MSPs, have long served as a lifeline for millions of seniors and individuals with disabilities. Administered by the Centers for Medicare and Medicaid Services, CMS, these programs help pay for Medicare premiums and other out-of-pocket expenses. And yet, a large number of eligible individuals have not enrolled due to the cumbersome administrative processes. However, CMS's recent final rule aims to change this by simplifying the enrollment process and reducing administrative barriers. The new rule intends to cut the red tape and make enrollment easier. It eliminates the redundant paperwork by leveraging data from other programs, a move that's projected to save nearly 19 million hours of paperwork each year for beneficiaries and over 2 million hours of work for state administrations. In terms of financial relief for the beneficiaries, one of the most impactful changes comes in the form of reduced costs for individuals. The final rule aims to reduce Medicare premiums and other out-of-pocket costs for an estimated 860,000 people, and the new verification process will leverage electronic sources and self-attestation, eliminating the need for beneficiaries to mail extensive paperwork. This modern approach is expected to save seniors and people with disabilities over $87 million in associated costs like transportation and postage. It's also, there's a streamlining process for the enrollment process. So historically, the complexity of the MSP application has discouraged eligible beneficiaries from enrolling. The new rule introduces two game-changing features. First is automatic enrollment for certain individuals into qualified Medicare beneficiaries or Quimby groups, and a strategic use of Medicare Part D low-income subsidy data. For instance, individuals receiving Supplemental Security Income, SSI, who are also eligible for Medicare, will now be automatically enrolled into the Quimby group, which offers additional Medicare premium and cost-sharing assistance. It also will make prescription drugs more affordable. Often one of the more overlooked benefits of MSP enrollment is that it leads to automatic inclusion in the Medicare Part D low-income subsidy program, which helps with the cost of prescription drugs. This rule complements other efforts by the administration to lower out-of-pocket drug costs under Part D, promising more affordable health care for older adults with disabilities. It also protects the vulnerable. And last, the rule finally pays particular attention to those who have not worked enough to qualify for premium-free Part A, specifically those that have worked in low-income jobs, and it allows such individuals to gain QMB coverage for both Part A and Part B premiums and cost-sharing as early as possible, offering crucial financial relief. In closing thoughts, the CMS final rule could be one of the most significant strides in improving Medicare accessibility in nearly a decade. By eliminating administrative burdens, reducing cost, and making enrollment easier, this rule can significantly impact the well-being of millions of Americans, allowing them to divert their limited income into life necessities such as food and housing. If you or a loved one could benefit from the MSP, now is a better time than ever to explore the eligibility and apply. With barriers to entry reduced, healthcare coverage through Medicare is now within easier reach for those who need it most. And with that, back to you, Chuck.
Wow, Tim, thanks very much. Folks, that was Tim Powell. Tim is a compliance expert, and also he's the national correspondent for ICD-10 Monitor. Now's the time for the Talked In Tuesday Coding Report with Lori Johnson. And good morning, Lori Johnson.
Good morning, Chuck. Good morning, Lydia. And hello to our listeners. And a very happy CDI week to those who are celebrating. Today, I am wrapping up the Coordination and Maintenance Committee meeting that was held September 12th and 13th. There were seven topics reviewed from the procedure addenda, including the Section X updates and the addenda. CMS has already posted the slides and the recordings from the meeting. It was a quick procedure meeting, which wrapped up around 11 a.m. Eastern time. There were two proposals on therapeutic agents that were not presented, but CMS wants your feedback. The diagnosis presentation began immediately after the completion of the procedure agenda, with the sad news that Donna Pickett had passed away at the end of August. She had led the development of diagnosis codes for a number of years, and her contributions will be missed. The diagnosis agenda was full with 28 topics plus the addendum. The diagnosis meeting wrapped up around 3 o'clock on September 13th, which was Wednesday. The materials and recordings will be posted on the CDC site. I checked this morning and they still have not been posted. Our own Dr. Reamer was very busy commenting during the diagnosis meeting. Our next steps include providing feedback on the code proposals. Proposals requesting implementation on April 1st, 2024, have a deadline for feedback of October 13th, 2023. If the code proposal requested an October 1st, 2024 implementation, feedback is due November 15th, 2023. Your comments can be submitted electronically. The email addresses have been provided in my article posted on icd10monitor.com yesterday. The next Coordination and Maintenance Committee meeting is March 19th and 20th, 2024. Lydia, back to you.
Thanks, Lori. That was Lori Johnson. Lori is a senior healthcare consultant for Revenue Cycle Solutions, LLC. Chuck?
Thanks, Lydia, and thank you again, Lori Johnson. And folks, be sure to read Lori Johnson's excellent article on the Coordination and Maintenance Committee meeting. Her article is in today's edition of the ICD-10 Monitor.
Attention coding professionals and all HIM professionals. Now available on demand is the 3-day webcast series you need to hear to remain compliant with the 2024 Inpatient Prospective Payment System. It's the IPPS Coding Summit, produced by ICD-10 Monitor. During this exclusive 3-day summit, you'll learn about important changes to the 2024 IPS, including new ICD-10 CM and PCS codes, plus insights, analysis, and answers to questions. Register now to listen and learn with the on-demand IPPS Coding Summit. That's the on-demand IPS Coding Summit, produced by ICD-10 Monitor, and now available on demand at the ICD-10 Monitor bookstore.
Thanks, Clark Anthony. And folks, be sure to register to listen to this remarkable on-demand 3-part webcast, the IPPS Coding Summit. You're going to learn all about the 2024 ICD-10 codes, as well as the MS-DRG shifts, and of course, they do shift. Here now with the Talk 10 Tuesday report on the social determinants of health is our good friend Tiffany Ferguson. And good morning, Tiffany Ferguson.
Good morning, Chuck. Good morning, all. And happy CDI week. So today I wanted to talk about from in my recent talks about Z-code capture and the value of reviewing case management documentation, I thought I would spend some time discussing the ideal state of what case management documentation should look like. I must also confess that recent social posts questioning the professional ownership of the initial assessment and whether this could be delegated to a supportive employee to collect information for the initial for the clinical staff also ignited my need to kind of discuss this morning. Although my reason is multifaceted, the question often comes from a model of case management that is primarily task-driven for discharge needs rather than a collaborative case management process that is between the patient and the care team, engaging to ensure patients' needs are met for the progression and transition of care from the acute setting. In this narrative, the CM has appropriately screened their patients to identify who needs services and who does not. This is done either by consult, independent screening, or technology algorithms in the EMR, which help streamline processes. Thus, the role of CM intervention is clearly needed by the case management professionals, such as RN, social worker, or an other aligned healthcare profession. Case management documentation should not be a simple to-do list of tasks yet to be completed for the patient's discharge. And the initial assessment should not be a sparse expansion of the patient demographic sheet. After a patient has been screened for needing case management services, the documentation should reflect a thorough assessment of what the CM completed with the patient and/or representative to expand upon the documentation that has already been obtained in the record from the medical team, particularly the attendings, H&P, and any initial nursing documentation. This may be a great time to also review outpatient services or prior hospitalizations to incorporate known information into the conversation and assessment. The initial assessment with the patient is the most important and proactive piece of CMs in laying the foundation of the care progression and transition of care process. This is not the time to quickly check boxes and ask generic close-ended questions, but rather engage with the patient and/or their family and representatives about the situation that landed them in the hospital and to build a trusting relationship for the next stages of care towards discharge. Without getting to the full outline of a great CM initial assessment, the main areas of focus should include the pre-hospital environment, home environment, supports that the patient was utilizing, an understanding of the patient's prior functioning level, incorporation of key decision makers in the patient's plan of care, also incorporation of SDOH risk factors, and identification of if any of those risk factors may be impacting the patient's access to or needs in managing their medical care. Additionally, the initial should discuss the anticipated care plan for the transition and any potential steps and/or barriers that may be impeding the success of that care plan. The ongoing notes, and particularly the last note that the CM writes when they are confirming the final plan for that patient discharge, should be the end of the story after the progression updates throughout the stay. This is the note that does not necessarily have to happen when the patient's getting ready to leave the hospital. It can be done prior to once the obligation to the CM role is complete for transitioning plan and maybe handed back to nursing, depending on what our needs for consultation are or involvement. The documentation should clearly reflect that the CM met the requirements of the conditions of participation, discharge planning, 482.43. Such as patient choice, integration of patient and our family in the care planning process. The patient disposition should be identified and specific to if the patient was just returning to their custodial nursing home or if they were obtaining any skilled nursing care upon return. It should clearly identify if the patient is resuming pre-existing home health services or if something new is to be arranged. Additionally, when the expedited start date of those services are identified, if known, for any post-acute arrangement should be included in the documentation. The fulfillment of these obligations may absolutely incorporate the advancements of the EMR with the use of dropdowns and shared fields across notes and authors for collaboration. However, it should also hold two principles. If it was not documented, then it was not done. and it should concisely depict the needed information for the intended audience. And with that, back to you, Lydia.
Wow, Tiffany, what a great multifaceted and collaborative approach to such a complex issue of social determinants of health.
And be sure to read Tiffany's article on this very topic. It's in today's ICD-10 Monitor. You know, as you heard us mention at the top of the broadcast, artificial intelligence is making remarkable strides in healthcare. And now artificial intelligence, AI, is helping coders with evaluation and management, E&M codes. So here now to report on the latest validation findings is the Executive Vice President of ChartPal, that Angela Jordan. And by the way, ChartPal, folks, is the documentation service for Calm Waters AI Incorporated. So here now, without any further interruption, is Angela Jordan. And good morning, Angela. Hey, good news about AI and E&M coding and that recent assessment. Tell us all about it, would you please?
You may be wondering why develop AI specifically for evaluation management services. Let me give you a little bit of the backstory. The genesis for the idea took place several years ago when our founders, who were working with private groups in healthcare systems, were made aware of the constant struggle with E&M reimbursement due to the subjectivity of payer policies and at that time, the 95 and 97 guidelines. So in a search for a solution to assist MDs at their desktop with their documentation, it was determined that there were no solutions available to fit the need at the time. So basically, we decided to create one. Calm Waters AI is a software solution that was developed to ease the burden of the arduous process of evaluation and management leveling right at the doctor's desktop. The application ingests and reads the patient's encounter note, applies the AMA evaluation and management guidelines in addition to key Medicare guidelines, then presents the coder, auditor, physician, or non-physician practitioner with an E&M level based upon that documentation. Now, when it comes to accuracy of Calm Waters AI, we engaged Mazars USA, which is an independent international auditing firm, to review the services leveled by the Calm Waters AI engine. At the conclusion of the review, Doug Berry, who is the principal of Mazars USA, wrote, "As a result of our comprehensive analysis, we found that when compared to industry benchmark for accuracy, the Calm Waters AI engine leveling tool's accuracy rate was determined to be 97%. which is above the industry accuracy benchmark of 95%. Now, I know you are probably wondering, how is it possible for an AI at this stage to be 97% accurate? So I'm going to use a term here that you might not have heard, and it's GIGO. This term was coined back in the late 50s, early 60s by programmers. One of them just happened to be a programmer and instructor for IBM. Some of you may already know it stands for garbage in, garbage out. When developing and working with AI, the same is true. As any AI ingests information, the results are solely dependent on the accuracy of the data. The importance of clean, concise, and compliant documentation is the key. As the AI engine was being developed, a great deal of data was needed to build and test the system. Constant audits of the results were crucial in identifying bad documentation, which in turn allowed us to provide feedback to the first groups using the system. And in working closely with the coders and the providers, they were able to clean up the bad documentation. With the updates to the E&M guidelines in 21 and 23, the same has been true. Our coding and compliance team is constantly reviewing the E&M levels generated by Calm Waters AI and working closely with clients to clean up documentation in order to grow the AI engine, in order to maintain compliant E&M levels, which often requires providers to clean up their templates and get rid of duplicative information. At this point, I'm sure you can see how the role of the coder will begin to evolve into more of an audit and validation role. and open new career opportunities in the software and the technology industry for those looking for a new and challenging change. For those coders currently working with groups using Calmwater's AI, instead of spending their time pulling out the components of medical decision-making or searching to see if time was documented, they will simply validate the NM level and then focus on other coding activities. My final words to all the Talk 10 Tuesday listeners, follow how AI is being used and remember, GIGO, garbage in, garbage out. Back to you, Lydia.
Thanks, Angela. AI has been a hot topic all across the board. What a great way to use it to benefit collect and correct data. Do you agree, Chuck?
I do indeed. Thanks very much for that comment. And thank you again, Angela, and you're listening to Talk 10 Tuesday.
What do you do when CMS unloads barrels of new codes into your lap like fallen leaves? How do you stay on top of your game as a coding genius? You subscribe to the ICD-10 Monitor Coding Portal. For an unbelievably low subscription of $35, you have access to the superstars of coding, Florian Bryant, Dr. Erica Reamer, and Lori Johnson. You also have access to more than 40 educational webcasts, plus you'll earn CEUs to maintain your credentials. The retail value, more than $5,960. But for a limited time, your subscription is only $35 per webcast, a savings of 75%. Subscribe today to the ICD-10 Monitor Coding Portal.
As many of you know, when we have a guest co-host, as we do today with Lydia Termakarova, we ask them to share a point of view, a POV. So here now with her POV is Lydia Termakarova.
Good morning, everyone, again, and thanks for the introductions, Chuck. I would love to share the benefits of revenue cycle operational assessment in a time of financial turmoil, aka crisis. Recently, my company, Innova Revenue Group, received a distress call from a critical access hospital in California, which was teetering on the brink of financial collapse and contemplating filing for Chapter 9 bankruptcy due to severe cash flow issues. Recognizing the gravity of the situation, we dispatched a team of experts to the hospital for a comprehensive two-day on-site revenue cycle operational assessment. The primary objective of this assessment was to identify avenues for optimizing revenue generation while maintaining strict adherence to compliance standards. And I'd suggest that same for your organization. The assessment focused on several key areas within the hospital operations, including registration, scheduling, coding, billing, the existing revenue cycle software, which is a little too obsolete, and case management. The goal was to scrutinize this facet of the hospital's operations and pinpoint areas where improvements could be made to bolster revenue and financial stability. During the thorough evaluation, we unearthed significant opportunity within the charge description master, CDM, and charge capture processes, with particular emphasis on the surgery and emergency departments. The charge description master, often referred to as the hospital charge master, is a sophisticated and intricate database utilized by healthcare facilities to manage the pricing structure for various medical services and procedures. The repository serves as a centralized reference guide, meticulously cataloging the costs associated with every facet of patient care, encompassing everything from diagnostic tests and surgical procedures to accommodation rates and administrative charges. Within the charge master, detailed descriptions of each service, treatment, or supply offered by the hospital are paired with the corresponding prices. It is the linchpin of precise billing, facilitating seamless insurance claims processing, and serving as an indispensable tool for financial planning within healthcare organizations. Recognizing the budget constraint faced by the hospital, we conducted a manual review of the chart description master. This meticulous review sought to ensure that all codes were up to date, essential, and aligned correctly with revenue codes. Simultaneously, we engage with individual hospital departments, examining their book of business to ascertain that all relevant information was accurately reflected in their respective chart description master. In tandem with this effort, we recommended the creation of Revenue Optimization Committee to initiate discussions surrounding charge entry. It swiftly became evident that significant room for improvement existed in this area. Many charges within an older revenue cycle billing system were incompletely configured, leading to revenue leakage. Furthermore, there was a dearth of comprehensive understanding among the staff regarding the intricacies of charge capture workflows. Accordingly, we embarked on an intensive education and software enhancement initiative. The goal was to empower the hospital staff with the knowledge and tools necessary to streamline and optimize charge capture processes. Several months into the project, tangible and positive trends in cash collections began to emerge, offering a ray of hope in the hospital's dire financial circumstances. In summary, our intervention and meticulous assessment of the hospital's operations, particularly in the realm of charge description master management and charge capture processes, played a pivotal role in averting a financial crisis. Through a combination of manual review, departmental engagement, and educational initiatives, the hospital began to regain its financial footing, reaffirming the critical role that meticulous revenue management plays in the sustainability of healthcare institutions. Back to you, Chuck.
Wow. Thanks, Lydia, very much. That was an excellent topic, and we thank you very much for your talkback segment today. By the way, folks, I think it was quite relevant for Lydia to talk about that experience that she went through, because as you heard Lori Johnson mention, today is CDI week. And that is going to be a wrap for this live edition of Talk 10 Susan. I want to thank our panelists today, Tiffany Ferguson, Lori Johnson, Tim Powell, Angela Jordan, who reported our lead story this morning, and a very special thank you to you, Lydia Taramakarova, for co-hosting today's Talk 10 Tuesday. Until next Tuesday, I'm Chuck Buck reporting for ICD-10 Monitor and Talk 10 Tuesday. Thank you very much for being with us. Have a great week, everybody.
Talk 10 Tuesday is a production of ICD-10 Monitor.